Well, it's good to be here. We've been really looking forward to this, and especially seeing some of your familiar faces that were here 2 years ago. We got started on something, and we haven't finished, so it's probably the biggest gap in messages you've ever had. 2 years. Just the way it is, but we'll continue on kind of where we left off. A lot's happened in 2 years for all of us, I'm sure. 2 years is a long time today. Things can really reverse in life, and especially as we have a little bit more perspective in our life, looking around, and I'm seeing that most of you are probably in the 40 plus category. There might be a few 40 minuses here, but we're all in that time where we're thinking about how do you make this last half, the second half, really count. I got a birthday card. I think I told you 2 years ago when I was with you, but a birthday card when I turned 35. And the card was read just normally, and then it got to the end, and the person who had sent it to me put a personal note in there, and they said, "Congratulations, you're halfway there. May the second half be greater than your first half." Well, they just meant it, you know, just to say, but I got thinking of that, and the next couple of days I thought, now, you know, that's really true. That could happen. Knowing now what I know in my life, if I can make the next 35 years, of course he was referring to the 70, but this could really be exciting. But again, to think of the downside, perhaps, of what would it take to really make this second half go well, finish well, leave a legacy, make an impact with the life and experiences and all that God has put in my life. And it started on a bit of a pilgrimage, looking about, looking into a lot of different things. And I made a number of studies over that 36th year. What kind of people made it? What kinds didn't? Why didn't they make it? Why didn't they finish well? I was astounded as I looked through the Bible and the Old Testament. I found that only 15% of all the leaders in the Old Testament that I could find and trace far enough to know whether they finished well, only 15% finished well. Just not recently, I was looking at a book by Farrar. It's Finishing Strong. You read that? Any of you men? It's a good book to read. Finishing Strong, and he starts out by quoting several sages. But he said in that, he comes to the conclusion as after talking to these sages, he says, you know, from all their experiences, 1 out of 10 people finish well. 1 out of 10. And the question is, what makes you think you'll be that one? Well, we could all finish well. We could all work on that. There's a lot of them that won't finish well. But I was really deeply moved by the challenge of my own life, but also just what it will take to help others do that. So for the last almost 20 years, I've been working on this, of what does it take to help. I've been focusing primarily on men, to help men not only finish the course well, but leave a legacy. So it's with that in mind, we got together last 2 years ago and had a lot of fun going through that. And one night we got on, and I guess it was the last night, and there were so many things going already. I thought, well, I've got to shift. So we shifted around, and we did a whole bunch of things. And so I left a lot out. So we'll pick up where we left off and get a little perspective first. So I've been really looking forward to this, to try to round out some things. Tonight's just going to get us into the scope of it, the idea of it. Getting older. Getting older isn't as bad as it was before. Especially for my parents, what getting older meant was a lot different. As a matter of fact, for the boomers, which most of you would be, it's quite different. Back in 1930, the average span of life was 50 years old, was just under 50. And today it's a little over 75. As a matter of fact, if you take care of yourself, I've got a friend who is an insurance person, and they make their living on predicting how long you're going to live, and so they really work at it and keep the statistics right. He told me that if, given the fact of how my parents were and how well healthy they were and keeping my own self in health, and I'm 56 now. He says, you should probably last to about 90. I thought, wow, can you imagine that? And it's not just the end that's kicked out, but what's happened is, in the football terminology, is the third quarter is what's really gotten long. It used to be when you got to the end of your 40s, you looked ahead and you thought, well, 60's right down the road. I better start preparing, you know, looking for a place, maybe to move and move by the kids or doing things like that. Well, you don't think that way anymore, because now the third quarter is looked at the late 40s all the way to the early 70s. People are going to be healthier. This is what they say about the boomers. On an average, they're aging better than any previous generations. They're healthier and more fit. They're more youth-oriented. They're better educated. They're more committed to personal growth. They rejected the traditional vision of aging, which is characterized by disengagement, decline, and passivity. Is that true of you? Yeah, there you go. All right. So you're going to go for it. So also what's happened with a lot of the ones, all of us in this room, is that in the second half, the possibility for a great many people to become successful as they've done that their first half, so the second half leaves a lot of things open. It doesn't necessarily mean substantial fortune, but it does mean that people will have options that previous generations did not. Just in talking to some of you, some of the things you've done, where you've gone, the opportunities to go out and as physicians, serve in other places, fly here, fly there. It's just the generations that went before didn't think of those things. So people can focus more on doing what they want to do rather than what they must do. You may not feel that right now, but it's coming. And we'll talk about that. It also means that people aren't ready to retire. Now, let me just ask you a question. Put your hands up when I say. Now, how many would say that if you are 60 years old, you're old? How many would say that if you're 70 years old, you're old, in your concept? Okay. How many would say that if you get to 75, you're old? How about 80? Oh, now you're starting to go up. More? 82. 82, okay. 82, you're quitting, huh? I'm old. Okay. Well, do you know that the whole concept of getting old has changed? And the latest information that I was reading a while ago in an article, it was interesting, that people did not think they were old until after 75, by and large. Now, that was not true. Huh? Sorry, Skip. Is this... Oh, okay, all right. So will I. My wife and I just finished a horrendous bout of flu, and we're both just coming out of it, but it was one of those ones where you get hit, I mean really hit. We went to the doctor, and he just said, so I'll assign you something, but you just have to go home and sleep it through and you know, tough it out, and we did. It was nice lying in bed sick together. Somewhat romantic. Yes, right. But that's why it's important when we look at this halftime, when we have perspective on it, it's really important to see that life is moving along, perhaps too fast for us in many cases. Suddenly you wake up, you have these little kids, and next thing you know, they're leaving high school, they're getting into college, and you start thinking, golly, did we get enough time? Did we do the things we wanted to do? And then they're off and running, and some of the ideas that you thought you would have liked to have done are past now, and then they're out and they're growing up, and something happens when they go off to college. I don't know if any of you have had off to college kids, but that first semester, they go out as high school kids, but they come back at Christmas after the first semester and they've grown up. I mean, it's almost scary to sit down and talk to them. They're adults. They can talk about subjects that they couldn't talk about before. Sit back and scratch their chin and chat. I mean, they're just different. And so life just goes on. And kids are growing, and we're growing, and opportunities are there, and it's almost too fast. And it's almost like you need to blow the whistle and say, slow down for a bit. I need to rethink. I need to regroup. I need to reorient. And that's what we need to do. And I love the book that Bob Buford, a good friend of mine, has written, and it's perhaps some of you have read it. It's called Halftime. And he's just taken the football analogy. And basically, it's from age 40 to 55 is the halftime. And that's a time where somehow you need to regroup. Somehow you need to think, because the second half is what's going to win the game, isn't it? The first half, you might have to, you know, adjust a great deal, because some of the decisions you made in your first half might not be the ones you would have liked to have made. If you could run the videotape back to your when you got married and started out, you might have, you'd like to do some things differently. But it's too late to do that. But the second half is going to really win the game. It's going to really change it for you. And it's going to be significant as well, because there's an increase, basically. And you've seen this analogy. Someone once said that, you know, you just have to, you know, if someone gave you the option of being paid a penny and doubling the penny every day for 30 days, or take $1 million, which would you take? Yeah, you double the penny, those who are mathematicians. And it's really interesting. So if you double the penny and you start out, it just kind of keeps growing like this and goes through, and then finally around the 10th day, you've got $5.12. Not very impressive. And if you compare this to our ages or just the times of growing, there's not a lot to invest, is it? The first 10 years are more receiving than taking, or more receiving than giving. And so then it goes on, and you see it keep growing and keep growing. And suddenly you get to up here, and you're 20 years, you're two-thirds through, and you've only amassed about $5,000, and it doesn't seem like much. But as you turn the 40th year in your own life, and as we get in beyond in the penny, look what happens. You get to the 24th, which is 80% of the way. 80%! And you're still only $83,000, $84,000 accumulated. And that's where some of us are. We're at that turning point. We're in the 40s and 50s, and that's where we're turning, and it's starting to accumulate. But look what happens in the last 20% of time. And it goes all the way to 5,368, and so, I mean 5 million, over $5 million. The exponential power. And that's the kind of view we need to have as our lives. You will invest it in different ways. But you have far more to invest in lives. Far more of a legacy to bring to people. Far more wisdom. Your contribution to situations will be different, but far greater, deeper, more appreciated, responded to. A few words to a person can have an impact, whereas when you're 30 years old, you could talk your way blue and the person still wouldn't have responded, perhaps, in the same way. Because years have tempered and they'll continue to grow. And so that's an exciting proposition. I remember when I turned 40, I was really excited about that. They kind of put out, you know, that it's black 40s, and you know, you have this, you know, black drapery, and everybody gets sad at these parties. And I thought, boy, I'm not sad at all. I'm excited. And then when I turned 50, I thought it was even better, because if 40 was that way, 50, you have more opportunity. You can say things. You can step into situations. And I was even speaking at a place, and I had said something, and the person says, "Oh, what was that again?" And I said, so I repeated so they could write it down. And they said, "And who said that?" And I said, "Oh, I said that." I said, "Oh, okay." You know, it was okay. You're 50 years old. You're over 50. You should know something. So you have a different spirit. There's a different opportunity. So it is fun. It's fun to get into that. Well, Moses only wrote one psalm, and it was a great psalm. But the psalm basically was written in the second half of his life, probably around in the fourth quarter. And he's praying this in Psalm 90. Let's take a look at this just for a moment. We won't spend much time on it. I just want you to catch the grasp of it, they catch the thought and the flow of it. He starts out, and it's a prayer, and he says, "Lord, you have been our dwelling place throughout all creation, generations. Before the mountains were born, or you brought forth the earth and the world from everlasting to everlasting, you are God. You turn men back to dust." Verse 4, "For 1,000 years in your sight is like a day that has just gone by, or like a watch in the night. You sweep men away in the sleep of death. They are like the new grass of the morning. Though the morning it springs up new, by evening it is dry, withered away. what he's doing is reflecting. He's just saying, you know, I've watched, Lord, I've watched this. And he says, you are eternal. You're the great God. You are the one. You created. You're forever. You're everlasting. And you stand over time from the beginning to the end. One day is just like 1,000. As you look it out, it could be 1,000 years. It's just like a day with you. You watch eternity from the very beginning to the end, whenever that was. You were there. And so they're like nothing to you. And then he's saying, you know, we're just like grass. We're here today and gone tomorrow. Our lives are so fragile. And then he says that we're even sinful in this fragileness. We're sinful. We're prone to sin and we haven't done things right. And even my sin is available to you. You see it. There's nothing secret to you. You've seen it all. So he's saying, you know, life ends. And it just comes to an end. It's filled with trouble and sorrow. But he says it doesn't have to be that way. And in verse 12, he says, Lord, so even though you might be angry, he says, could you teach us? Teach us to number our days aright, that we may gain a heart of wisdom. I was sitting with a Hebrew expert one time, and I said, what does that mean in Hebrew? What? Just tell me what it would mean. He looked at it a bit, and he says, since life is so short, O Lord, you must help us make it count. Make it count, God. And then he goes on and talks in verse 14 about that his intimacy with God. Satisfy us in the morning with your unfailing love, that we may sing for joy and be glad all our days. Make us glad for the many days as you have afflicted us. And he goes on and ends off, may the favor of the Lord our God rest upon us. Establish the work of our hands for us. Yes, establish the work of our hands. That same friend said, I said, what does that mean? It says simply, make the efforts of a lifetime count. Make the efforts of a lifetime count. And that's what our prayer is. We really want them to count. We want them to count in the right places and the right in the right ways. It's really going to be important to us. And that's Moses' prayer. He said, help me make this lifetime count. Even though it's short, even though I fail, even though you see my sin, God, you can make something out of it. Help me, help me. And that's our prayer. We really want to see that happen. And so what I'll be talking about a little bit after tonight, we're just going to go into a few things, is this. Is that I think as I look at the second half of life, I really see this. I see that God's desire for us is to live purposefully, fruitfully, and paradoxically. As I've watched people's lives, and we've looked at hundreds of these timelines, if they've looked and watched their lives, and they've written about their lives, and then we've looked at other people who have done well and those that haven't, and watched them. These are three things that stand out of those who finished well. People finished well, they live purposefully, they live fruitfully, and they live paradoxically, living differently. And so we'll get a chance to talk about that as we look in this, particularly tomorrow. But I want to set the context. And could you hand that out, Gary? Yes, please. Look at a context of, and you'll be getting a copy of this, and it'll fit right in your notebook, Life Stages. Now, it's been upgraded since 2 years ago. You saw it. Done a lot more work on it. And it looks a little fuzzy, but I've learned I better not fix it myself. One time I fixed it myself, and my wife said, you just made it worse for most people. So I can't go by my eyes anymore. So we're at that point. But just to give ourselves a focus on this, to understand a little bit, let me just review somewhat of where we are on this. We talked before about that first stage. These are the learning years. The big question we need to answer is, who am I? And some of you are getting kids to that age. You're all past it. We won't spend much time there, but it's good to know that these kids are pushing off. They're trying. They're doing all these things, characterized by high activity, broad learning, hopeful and anxious at the same time. searching and verifying, pushing off, trying to understand what their values are, what really is important. 20-year-olds are always looking for people who are living out the values they've come to know as important. And when I don't see them, they're desperately. And that's why you folks have tremendous opportunities to set the pace. You don't think people are looking to you? They certainly are. They're watching you like hawks. Your kids will bring others home, and their parents don't live that way, and they're watching you live that paradoxical life, giving away when you should be getting, sharing and blessing people. And these kinds of things, you'll see that happen, and they'll watch you. Because they're desperately, desperately looking for someone who's living out the values that are important to them. That's why it's important when we were kids, I mean, when we had our kids growing in the teenage and 20s, we tried to read and read biographies, lift up other people before them. I was talking to a headhunter one time that placed 20-year-olds, and I asked him, what type of questions do you ask most frequently? And he told me, excuse me. And he said, one question was interesting. He said, tell me about your heroes. I said, that's interesting. Why do you ask that? He says, because you tell me your heroes, and I'll tell you about your values. I said, that's curious. How many really have a hero? He says, that's the sad part. He says, not many today have heroes. And so you can be those heroes, and these kids are looking for them, and that's why we want to get other people around them. Bring people in that really live out values. Bring them in. Invite them for lunch. Get a missionary to your house if they ever come to the church. Bring them over. Talk them to them. Why did you start this way? What happened? What went into the decisions you made? Expose them. That's really tremendous, and it's so important. They're gathering. They're self-oriented. Not selfish, necessarily. Maybe look that way, but they're self-oriented because they're so interested. Who am I? Where do I fit? How do I measure up in this world? Is there a place for me? All those kinds of questions. And these are the dangers, of course. No mentors, weak inner life, not knowing self, bad life decisions. Our kids, we thought we taught them everything they need to know. But we set them off. When they got out there, they made some bad decisions. And, of course, at first we thought, oh, my goodness, it was all our fault. But we made bad decisions, too. They're going to make bad decisions. Fortunately, they weren't too bad. They bought the wrong car, spent too much money on it, or whatever like that, but there didn't seem to be terrible life decision, but there's some that are terrible. Because these are the years you're going to get married. You'll set attraction and a direction on your career. A lot of things like that. So this is the 20s. excuse me. The keys to success are down there, and you can read those. And some of these follow all the way through. So we look at the 30s. The 30s are the most pressured time of life. All those who have finished the 30s said, amen. You're out of it. And that's just great to be out of the 30s. Why is it true? Why is it true the 30s are the most pressured time? Job, kids, marriage. You know, you get a chance to really, people expect something for you, from you. I remember when I went into the military, I got this brown bar that said I was a second lieutenant. And I was kind of proud of it, but when I got to my first assignment on the military base, I saw these sergeants kind of smirking when they salute. Like, there's a half man right there, you know. Doesn't know much. And that's what it was. It was kind of a symbol of, I don't know anything, please help me, you know. So there I was, and I would be going through. But then after 18 months, I finally got this silver bar. Well, that wasn't much better, but it was at least a little bit more, and you'd get a little snappier salute, you know. And because they thought, well, okay, maybe he's, you know, maybe he knows something. Well, then you got to be a captain, and you got two tracks there. And I can remember everybody, they just started listening to you. They started to look to you to do some things because you've been around 4 or 5 years. And they expected something out of you. It's the same way in your 30s. It's like you became a captain. People expect something from you. When you've got a 20-year-old sitting around, they may know a lot, but you don't expect a lot. And if you get something, you're really surprised, aren't you? And that's the way it is, because they have tremendous knowledge. Matter of fact, their knowledge is overwhelming in some cases. And it's intimidating because of all they have learned. But they don't have a lot of maturity yet. And you just have to watch some of these people that have risen fast and the mistakes and the silly things they do. You just read a little bit about our leader of Microsoft, Bill Gates. And you just watch these. They're not able to handle all the success and the responsibility that comes their way. But you get in your 30s, people start expecting more. So a lot of pressure comes, and it puts a lot of attention. So whereas before high activity, now is an intense schedule. Broad learning, now it's narrow because you want to focus on the areas you're responsible for. And so in the medical field, I'm sure that's true as well. You're focusing more on your specialty, but it's also true in other professions. And so it's more narrow, it's intense, and there's that tyranny of the urgent. You just go and go, and you're pushing, and everything seems to be important. Why? Because you want to achieve, you want to make it, you want to be accepted by a people that you respect. If you're a physician, you want to be respected by other physicians. It's important. The guy down the street isn't that important, but it is important for other people. I mean, it's very important to be looked at by your peers as someone worthwhile, has worth and value to the group. And so you work hard for that. And you're trying to earn a living, and you're going hard, you're producing. And so production is very, very important. And so these things go on, and you're improving. And here it's self-oriented, here it's work-oriented. I mean, it's just work, work, work in the 30s. And that's the way it is. So there's some downsides. No anchors. Life structure, that is clear purpose, direction, values, some priorities in your life. Life is a matter of regrouping all the time, but in the 30s, you don't even slow down enough to regroup. And some don't recognize it clearly enough to do that. So you make some bad decisions. You make some bad decisions over career or time versus time with the kids. Oh, well, we'll get them tomorrow. We'll do it later. That's okay if I go 80 to 100 hours. See, I'll pick it up later. But you suddenly find out if you had some good mentors would be telling you, hey, it never gets picked up. Well, I'll do it. No, you won't. You will not be the first. There's never been one. Is that really true? That's true. I've watched them. Slow down now. Don't wait to your 40s. Why? You'll be very sad. Why? I got to earn. I got to do this. No. It's not going to be worth it. So people are trying to tell you, but see, you drive, and you say, this is the opportunity, it's now. And so we're all in that way, and 30-year-olders are just hit there, and some of you are just coming out of it, and you're starting to reel from it. And you stagger out of the 30s into the 40s, and you can see some of these things. You shift from faithfulness here, which is key, over to stewardship. You begin to be steward of what you've learned and what you know and your experience, and it's very important. And now, notice here, we didn't have peers, but now we have peers. Because in your 20s, you don't look to peers as resources, do you? They're more competitors. And so here we have peers, and they're starting to be very important for us. And feedback is absolutely crucial. But most people never get feedback. I ask more people, whether they be in physicians or wherever they are, particularly physicians who never have the opportunity of working together. I've got several close buddies that are physicians. And I ask them, do you ever get any feedback on how well you're doing? And they just laugh. I said, of course not. Then how do you know if you're not doing well, or you're doing well in something? He says, well, I just look at the bottom line. People keep coming in the door, I guess I'm doing all right. I said, is that the only standard of measurement? I said, well, I do some courses and I get ahead and I qualify for things. I said, that doesn't tell you how well you're doing. So feedback. Have you ever gotten feedback? How are you doing as a wife, husband, father, mother? How are you doing in your profession? You know, that's just absolutely crucial. And so we need to get feedback from those who can be old enough to give us some feedback. Someone who can tell us. And, of course, you never walk up to a person and say, hey, give me some feedback. How am I doing? What do you think they'll say? You're doing all right. But, you know, you say, hey, I'm running a little bit behind you. You're in your 50s, and I'm just coming out of my 30s. And if you could run the videotape, what would be some of the things you'd tell me? I used to ask that when I was 31 years old, went over as a missionary with our kids, and I'd find older missionaries and say, hey, if you could do it again, talking to a young guy like me, what would you tell me? One or two things that would really be important to you. What should I watch out for? What are the important things that really make it go, and what doesn't make it go? What do you wish you would have done? You know, you ask those questions, you can get some great feedback. And so feedback is absolutely crucial to us, because it helps us readjust and know how we're doing. And so that's feedback and response. And I talked to you a little bit about that, those who were here 2 years ago, the crucial area of response. I want to redouble the emphasis on that. Response is everything. Response to your circumstances, to the people in your life, to the events that come in, the hardships, the failures, your response. The event will come and go. The circumstances will come and go. But your response to them will affect your life forever. And so you're going through a tough circumstance. How you respond to it. What you need is some buddies, some peers that will come right up next to you and say, hey, we'll walk with you through this. Not go around it. I've watched it and I've tried it in my own life. Where you come into a difficult situation and you're just looking for, how do I get rid of this and get on? And you know what happens? It comes right back, doesn't it? And so what you need with somebody is, I need somebody who'll come alongside you and say, hey, I'll walk with you right up the middle through it. I'll help you obey God all the way through it. We had a guy moving our home. He was full-time with Campus Crusade, and suddenly his wife got the message of the feminist movement and felt like she had three kids. She was missing something. And life was passing her by, and she had so much to do, and being a mother and being a wife is just not making it. And she just left. She decided to cut out. And so there was still time lingering. Of course, she was around, and there was excuses going on. And so we moved the husband. There was such tension, he moved in the home. And so John turned to me one day. He says, could you help me just counsel me and work me through this? And I said, you know, I really can't, John. I'm not a counselor. I don't know anything about this. But I can do one thing. I can help you obey and walk right up the middle through it. And then if you do that, I promise you, you'll be a better man in the end than you ever were when you started. And God will be with you. He says, that's a good deal. Well, there were tough times. Because that 1 month of staying with us till we got things over turned out to 10 months. And with tears and difficulties and a lot of struggle. But he came out stronger. He really did. God's given him a message through his life. A lot of things have taken place because he walked right up the middle. Well, we need that desperately. But the 40s are where a lot of you are. And so the big question there, of course, where's my place? But here is, why am I here? Well, you think, well, didn't we figure that out in our 20s? Well, you did a little bit. But you don't have enough data in your life to figure that out at 20. And in the 30s, you're too busy and the data spirit is still a little bit shy and you're going hard. And it's not until you get into that mid-time, that the 40s into the early 50s, you begin to see why you're here. It isn't that you can have purposeful, meaningful contribution, that you can set goals for your life. Of course you can. You follow Christ, you seek to serve him, but it won't be until you get there. You begin to see this God using your life. You begin to recognize how he tends to use you, how he tends to use you with other people. Those gifts come along and they start rising up and they bless people when you use them. And so God begins to give you enough data. And last time we were here, remember the tunnel? Marshall was just telling me about that. Remember the tunnel? Life is like a tunnel, and the 40s is like the middle of the tunnel. Here it is. And so the tunnel's coming, and it goes through. And so when you get to the tunnel in the middle, where does the light come from? As you go into this tunnel all the way through to the middle, where does the light come from? From behind. You get more insights from behind. How does God, I could sit down with you, we could go over these last 20 years and we'd find you and I together, we could uncover all kinds of rich experiences with God that he's shown you, how he works in your life, what he does. Some of your gifts, maybe, well, I don't have money. Now you do. You're just coming out of it. And some of you, ladies among us, they're just coming out perhaps being a mom at home and watching those kids and working hard and going at it, and suddenly you pop out. You've got time, and you're in your 40s, and suddenly, hey, there's more time, more opportunity here. What do I do with that? And you know what most of them feel like? I'm behind. Everybody else has been running fast, and I've just been taking care of kids. I've had my head down here, and I suddenly get up, and uh-oh, everybody's ahead of me. But they're not, and you need to understand that. God has been working in your life. He's been writing a story in your life, and he wants to bring the story out. He wants to tell. Through you, he wants to tell. He's been doing things, and you need to keep reading and keep growing in Scripture and in doing the things you do, but God is putting in your life something that no one else will have. A message that will come out through who you are because he's been making you through who you are. But he's going to start putting this together in the 40s. You're going to see, how does that come together? And so as you go through the middle, suddenly as you go there, and by faith you come press forward, and you see this little dot on the end. I'll always remember Skip when I was young, and as a young officer, he also say, be careful when you see that little light down the end of the tunnel. It may be an oncoming train. Every time I hear that, Skip, I think of you. So the Lord is building in your life. It's good to drink water, but it's good to make sure it goes down the right pipe. But as you go out here, more light comes. More light, more light, more light. And that's the way it is. In a life, I think, designed or developed and followed, despite the circumstances, the more you go, the more blessing, the more excitement, the more light. It gets stronger and stronger. That's why you see Jesus in the end of his life. It says, with an iron will, he moved towards Jerusalem. Why? The end of his life, he knew what it was like. He knew where the gold was. The cross was waiting. And it can be the same with you. I meet people. You have a different style of life as you get into 50s and 60s and you on. But boy, there's a sense of destiny. There's a sense of direction that wasn't there before. There's kind of a confidence, and that works through that. And so as the 40s go through here, you can see changing schedule, targeted learning, targeted as to fitting into the kinds of gifts and purposes that you have. There's some uncertainty and a little bit weary because you're bouncing out of these 30s. You're catching your breath, and it's real. Questioning and adjusting. Why? Because as I said before, the 40s is a suddenly you switch reference points. Up to the 40s, the reference point was what? Birth. But after the 40s, it becomes death. And not in a morbid way, but suddenly you realize, I've got less years in front of me than I've got behind me. And that's a sobering experience. And I call it the 40s is the decade of death, second thoughts. You have a lot of second thoughts. Am I in the right profession? Do I do the right things? Should I be doing something different? I was talking not long ago with a businessman and a doctor, and both of them were thinking of getting out and going to seminary. And I said, why? I said, well, I'm just through. I got enough money, and I just got to do something different. I said, why? He said, well, I think I should do this, and I can really serve the Lord. Why? He said, well, I mean, that's really serving the Lord, isn't it? I said, why? You've had all these years that God's built up. You're an insider. And I think one of the problems with in physicians is that your whole profession is, in a sense, of giving your life to people. So you tend to think your ministry is through your physician work. I find most physicians are not ministering to their patients. You have a witness to your patients. Praise the Lord. But the long-range, deep ministry is not with your patients. I find they're in Sunday schools. They're in other people. They're with other docs. They're with couples. They're teaching. They're doing all kinds of other things. So it's what God wants to do is take in your profession. You're an insider. Nobody's going to have the access like you have. So it's a matter of rethinking what you're doing from the inside. Not leaving it, unless God calls you to come out. But these guys were just, they wanted to bolt it. Why? Instead of just change and figure out what God is calling you, what he wants you to do in the profession. Perhaps you need to rearrange things. Rethink it. Reorganize. Regroup. Reprioritize. But so God wants to do that here. He wants to help you think that through during the halftime. And that's powerful for you. And so these things go on. We begin to master. We're purpose-oriented. Very, very important. We're thinking more now of significance or meaning in our life. We want meaning. We don't want to spend the second half the way we spent the first half in the sense of just work, 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 especially coming off the 30s. You've worked so hard. You've put in the long hours. We don't want to do that anymore. We want to have meaning to it. You can. God has that in store for you. And so we get in touch with that. And isn't it all this is a loss? It isn't. It's been building up. But you needed to get into this to really understand what it's all about. And so these things, they're dangerous. Midlife meltdown. You know, just falling apart. I've seen guys do that. Just saying, hey, I don't think I can make it. I'm just going to ride out the rest of the voyage. And maybe you've seen some of your colleagues do that. No mentors or peers, that's still a great threat. They're your greatest source of input, insight for your life. Dabbling and plateauing, I'll talk more about that tomorrow. Dabbling, of course, doing a little bit of everything, never focusing and developing your spiritual gifts and the kinds of things you really do, and plateauing, flattening out. And there's some very important things here is the key to succeeding. Clarifying your purpose, understanding what you're all about, focusing yourself, focusing on this stewardship. Mentors, peers, developing a couple of key people around you. Response again, still important. Inner life growth. I'll talk about that a little bit later. Always ministry. And that just simply means you're giving your life away. Always giving your life to people in such a way that their lives are being enriched. Maybe one or two. Maybe a few. Maybe your kids. But you're consciously, intentionally giving your life away. Giving what God has given you. You're giving away. And then you come in towards these latter years, into the 50 plus, 55 plus, and you begin to see that there and how it starts to come together. And it focuses down, and there the big question is investment. Where do I invest? And it goes on. And through that, you can see it begins to converge, and there's more influencing, there isn't contributing. Back here is more contributing than there's influence. There's both of them, but they take a little different shift. And so you see this happening. You're others-oriented. A key characteristic is also generosity. You're giving away what you've learned, what you've accumulated. You're blessing people. Ever been around a 50, 60, 70, 80-year-old person that's generous in their life? They're a joy to be around. I had a job once where I contacted when I was still at West Point on the staff there, and I would have to go out and meet these old grads, go to these West Point societies in different places, and I would go there, and I'd talk to some of these fellows, and that's all they would do is talk about the past. I mean, they were backing their way through life at that point. And it's sad. Ever been around those? Well, the way it used to be. And I was a young captain. He'd just kind of, you know, get me in the corner and sit there and, oh, well, you know how it used to be, son. And I thought, wow, how do I get out of here, you know? So, dangers, stop learning and growing. Poof, that's death. Security-driven. Lack of purpose. Not finishing well. No meaningful connections. We can expand on those other times. Key to succeeding, making life count, investing, generosity, peers, mentors. At this point, notice peers shift. Peers are more important to you. You've got to finish well. If you're going to finish well, you get around people who are committed to finish well. You gather together and you help each other. And that's so important. And these other ones are there. Now, there's one thing I just wanted to tell you about. And that's this middle part. The middle part is very important. It's there are always, at any one time, there are three stories going on in our lives around us. One story is our personal story, and that's what's represented here. It's my story, your story. It's the story that's coming about when you were born, the family you came from, through high school, into college, into school, into your profession, gone on, married along the way, you did this, you did that, and it's just unfolding. And it's a story about your life. And up till this time, up to through the 30s, is most other people were writing your story. You weren't writing it. Other people were writing your story for you. They were determining when you worked, how hard you worked, all kinds of things, what your priorities were. Perhaps you got a little bit of push in there and you expressed yourself. But then from here on in, you begin to write your own story. What God is telling you to write. God's leading you to write. And then there's this cultural story about the United States, for instance, our culture. It's being written. It's being developed. And that's going on. And that's going up and down. And we don't know where it's going to go in the future. But it's been a good story up till now. And now we're concerned about it. So then there's a third story going on. The larger story. The transcendent story. It's God's story. It's God moving through history. And not a day has been missed. Not a point has been changed. Not a purpose has been missed. And God has got this story going. It's exciting. It started in our lives with creation, but He started long before that. And it has the whole story as we read through the Bible. We see it unfold through the Old Testament, into the New Testament, the coming of Christ, the opening of the door to come back, and the ongoing. And God's purposes are coming out. And He's bringing all of history in under, as Ephesians 1, 9 and 10 says, under the Lordship of Jesus Christ. He's not a day late. He's not off schedule. He doesn't sit and bite his fingernails and wondering whether there's going to be peace in the Middle East. He knows all about it. It's the transcendent story. It's the larger story. Well, what's really important is that we connect this my story, our story, with the larger story. And see, we can get so caught up in our own story, can't we? Unfolding who I am and where I am and where am I going. And it's really important to understand that, but not become consumed with it. You meet a lot of people, that's all they're concerned about is their own story. I mean, we have a president like that. His whole life is consumed with his own story. He's not concerned about the bigger stories. We know that. It's just, how do I come out of this? How am I doing? Where am I going? Well, how am I going to get out of this? That's my story. But we need to plug this into the larger story because it inspires us. It gives meaning. We could fire that up. It gives meaning. And I want to just show you a short film clip. Any of you ever see the film Henry V? There's a great little scene in that. And I'd like to just show it to you. It just takes a few minutes. Yeah, we'll take this down. I'll just set this down here. That's all. And we'll set this down here. But let me just tell you the history of it so you understand what's happening here. It's a true story, as you know, as Shakespeare wrote this. And what it happens here is that in the great Agincourt, it's the Battle of Agincourt. And what's happened is the British or the English are coming along. They've been winning battle after battle. The king is trying to establish himself to take over the French throne. And the French have been fighting but losing and losing and losing two large battles. And now comes Agincourt. And it's just right there. The British are, the English are just tired. They've been fighting. No reinforcements, but they've been doing well. And suddenly in comes the French. And the French are fresh. They're 5-1 outnumbered. And it's just before this battle that I want you to see. Get how this king connects them to a greater story. And what happens when you lose the greater story and see your own?
Incision in their hides, that their hot blood may spin in English eyes.
Do but behold yon poor and starved band, and your fair show shall suck away their souls, leaving them but the shales and husks of men. There is not work enough for all our hands.
Why do you stay so long, my lords of France? Yon island carrions, desperate of their bones, ill-favoredly become the morning field.
They have said their prayers, and they stay for death. A very little let us do, and all is done. Then let the trumpet sound, the tucket sonance, and the note to mount, for our approach will so much dare the field, England shall couch down in fear and yield.
The king himself is rode to view their battle.
A fighting man. They have full 80,000.
That's 5-1. Besides, they are all fresh.
It is a fearful odds.
Oh, that we now had here but 10,000 of those men in England that do no work today.
What's he that wishes so? My cousin Westmoreland? No, my fair cousin. If we are marked to die, we are enough to do our country loss. And if to live, the fewer men, the greater share of honor. God's will, I pray thee, wish not one man more. Brother, proclaim it, Westmoreland, through my host, that he which hath no stomach to this fight, let him depart. His passport shall be made, and crowns for convoy put into his purse. We would not die in that man's company that fears his fellowship to die with us. This day is called the Feast of Crispian. He, the that outlives this day and comes safe home will stand at tiptoe when this day is named, and rouse him at the name of Crispian. He that shall see this day and live old age will yearly, on the vigil, feast his neighbors and say, tomorrow is St. Crispin's. Then will he strip his sleeve and show his scars and say, these wounds I had on Crispin's day. Old men forget, yet all shall be forgot, but he'll remember with advantages what feats he did that day. Then shall our names, familiar in their mouths as household words, Harry the King, Bedford and Exeter, Warwick and Talbot, Salisbury and Gloucester, be in their flowing cups freshly remembered. This story shall the good man teach his son, and Crispin Crispian shall ne'er go by from this day to the ending of the world, but we in it shall be remembered. We few, we happy few, we band of brothers, for he today that sheds his blood with me shall be my brother. Be he ne'er so vile, this day shall gentle his condition. And gentlemen in England, now abed, shall think themselves accursed they were not here, and hold their manhoods cheap, whilst any speaks that fought with us upon St. Crispin's Day! My sovereign lord, bestow yourself with speed! The French are bravely in their battle set, and will with all expedience march upon us! All things are ready if our minds be so.
Finish the man whose mind is backward now.
Thou dost not wish more help from England, cuz?
God's will, my liege. Would you and I alone, without more help, can fight this royal battle?
You know your places. God be with you all!
Once more I come to know of thee, King Harry, if for thy ransom thou wilt now compound before thy most assured overthrow.
Who hath sent thee now?
The Constable of France.
I pray thee bear my former answer back.
Bid them achieve me and then sell my bones. God, God! Why should they mock poor fellows thus? Let me speak proudly. Tell the constable, we are but warriors for the working day. Our gayness and our guilt are all besmirched with rainy marching in the painful field. But by the mass, our hearts are in the trim. Herald,
save thou thy labor. Come thou no more for ransom, gentle herald.
They shall have none, I swear. But these my joints,
yeah! Which, if they have, as I shall leave in them, shall yield them little.
Tell the constable.
I shall, King Harry. And so fare thee well. Thou never shalt hear herald any more.
My lord, most humbly on my knee, I beg the leading of the Barwood.
Take it, brave York. Now, soldiers, march away.
And how thou pleasest God, dispose the day.
Power of keeping connected to the larger story. That's what life's all about. If we ever get so wrapped up in our own story and we lose the connection, that's what happens. We start feeling sorry for ourselves, watching only to ourselves as you watch this. But what the king was able to do is connect them to the greater story. And that's what we need to do, the greater story of God. That's what makes life meaningful. That's what gives tremendous motivation. That's what brings meaning to our lives. And we'll talk about that the next 2 days. Let me pray. Father, it's a wonderful thing that you sent your own Son, Jesus Christ, to reveal yourself and to win us to yourself, to make the way back to you through the blood of Jesus. That we can be connected to the greater things, the greater purposes of what you, God, the mighty God, is doing. That we may seem small in number. We may seem that we don't have enough. We may be tired. We may be weary, uncertain of our own selves. But as we connect to your story and who you are the victor. You have already won the campaign. You stand victorious. History is in your hand. And we, though we are here today and gone tomorrow, like grass, we can make a difference. We can make a contribution. We can bring to the lives around us, into the situation we are in, something that no one else can bring. We can bring the great sense of destiny, the uniting with the God himself, and all that he brings to us is ours. Give us, Lord, this view and perspective, even this weekend as we meet. Connect us once again to that great transcendent story and to the one who is in charge of the story. And it is his name we pray. Amen.